don't care who wins on Survivor. We care about surviving. Corporate sponsored global warming.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. It's like, why don't we adapt our force our children to adapt to the changing climate? No, but really, if we want to prepare our children for the coming global changes, we need to raise them in little hot houses, greenhouses, put their crib in a place that's about 10 degrees hotter than where you are, and just adapt them in a drier, hotter environment. Don't let them drink much water.
How do you mean adapt children?
So that... Well, we can't reverse climate change. Obviously, anything that we did to try to reverse it would just make something else worse. Every time we do something, it makes it worse.
Climate scams. Seven roads to hell on Earth. Global warming. It's the sun. Cosmic rays. The U.S. military. Anybody but us. The common car-driving, energy-sucking, Western-style humanoid. Welcome to the Radio EcoShock Guide to Climate Change Scams, the wrong-headed ideas and pork barrel wrong turns that stall, real solutions to rapid climate change. Someone once said, there are as many ideas and excuses as there are humans. We wouldn't want it any other way. But if you're about to drive off a cliff, new theories from the backseat about our ability to fly or survive a 1,000-foot plunge aren't really that helpful. Maybe we should take our foot off the accelerator instead and try the brakes. In another hour-long special, we'll be examining real solutions to climate change. But right now, get ready for a quick countdown of quack theories and big business scams that guarantee your grandchildren will be migrating towards the poles if they can. Crackpot theory number one. Up in Alaska, the American military has been operating a secret project called HAARP. That's spelled with two A's if you want to Google it. The boys with billion-dollar toys have set up whole acres of high-frequency radio transmitters with dubious aims. They claim to be developing a way to communicate with underwater submarines and their forces around the world. But government documents also show an intent to control weather events for military or economic warfare. This may be possible. The radio waves can disturb the upper layers of the atmosphere, the ionosphere, almost anywhere on Earth, using a kind of bouncing. One idea is to add power to a pre-existing hurricane or typhoon over an enemy country to make the storm much worse. The U.S. military has declared they want to control weather as a weapon. They've been working on it for decades and spent countless secret billions on the HAARP project. But there's a big difference between weather and climate. You might boost a storm, but that doesn't change the climate on Earth for 1,000 years, the way our industrial pollution can. Plenty of reputable scientists have looked into the HAARP conspiracy claims, and they don't buy it as a cause for climate change. This theory builds on the justifiable distrust of the American government and its stated aims of military domination of Earth, but just because a conspiracy is afoot doesn't make it real when it comes to climate change. My apologies to the woman who calls my show every week, every time climate change is mentioned, to tell me about HAARP and pass on the websites and authors specializing in this theory. Call me a fool, but I'm going to throw my belief toward the thousands of scientists from all over the world who are as close to certainty as anyone can be that humans are triggering massive climate change through their pollution, their carbon burning, their lifestyles. People, don't bother calling me about HAARP as a cause of climate change. Off-base theory number two, blame the sun. A whole chorus of media deniers are leaping onto a bandwagon started by just two scientists in Europe. The news story is, the whole solar system is melting because of a storm of extra cosmic rays coming from the sun. Like most corny ideas, this one is based on a kernel of truth. Yes, the climate has changed dramatically many times over the last billion years. It goes from steaming hot to glaciers without any help from humans. We don't yet know why, for sure. The prevalent theory involves a slight shift in the axis of the Earth, over hundreds of thousands of years, perhaps acting in tandem with storms on the sun, seen here on Earth as sunspots. Generally, these changes develop over long periods, much longer than Homo sapiens have been here. Now, friends of the oil industry, or plain contrarians who like to see their names in the press, have come forward claiming that this very moment in history, right now, the 21st century, just happens to be one of those swing times. Don't worry about your gas-guzzling car. Turn on all the lights, because humans have nothing to do with it, they say. Gosh, I feel better already. It's just an accident we're filling the sky with greenhouse gases at the very time the sun is getting cranky. And look, Mars is warming up, too. It was 109 degrees below zero, we think, and now it's a balmy 105 degrees below. Based on very limited research, of course. All the planets are hotting up, they say, so relax and let the carbon party roll. Alleged science that makes us feel guilt-free. I like that. Based on the acres of newsprint given to this theory, in business-oriented newspapers like Canada's National Post, and on reactionary TV programs, you know, the ones with lots of ads for SUVs, you would think the cosmic ray theory is backed by the majority of scientists. Not really. Let's tune into a column by UK columnist George Monbiot, published March 13, 2007, in the Guardian newspaper. He was answering this "The Sun is Doing It" theory as promoted in a British Channel 4 alleged documentary called The Great Global Warming Swindle. Monbiot writes, and I quote, "The film's main contention is that the current increase in global temperatures is caused not by rising greenhouse gases, but by changes in the activity of the sun. It is built around the discovery in 1991 by the Danish atmospheric physicist Dr. Egil Friis Christensen that recent temperature variations on Earth are in, quote, strikingly good agreement, end quote, with the length of the cycle of sunspots. The shorter they are, the higher the temperature." Unfortunately, he found nothing of the kind. A paper published in the journal EOS in 2004 reveals that the agreement was the result, quote, of incorrect handling of physical data, quote. The real data for recent years shows the opposite, that temperatures have continued to rise as the length of the sunspot cycle has increased. When this error was exposed, Friis Christensen and his co-author published a new paper, purporting to produce similar results. But this too turned out to be an artifact of mistakes they had made, in this case, in their arithmetic. So, Friis Christensen and another author developed yet another means of demonstrating that the sun is responsible, claiming to have discovered a remarkable agreement between cosmic radiation, influenced by the sun, and global cloud cover. This is the mechanism the film proposes for global warming. But yet again, the method was exposed as faulty. They had been using satellite data which did not, in fact, measure global cloud cover. A paper in the Journal of Atmospheric Science and Solar Terrestrial Physics shows that when the right data are used, a correlation is not found. So the hypothesis changed again. Without acknowledging that his previous paper was wrong, Friis Christensen's co-author, Hendrik Svensmark, declared that there was, in fact, a correlation not with total cloud cover, but with low cloud cover. This, too, turned out to be incorrect. Then, last year, Svensmark published a paper purporting to show that cosmic rays could form tiny particles in the atmosphere. Accompanying it was a press release, which went way beyond the findings reported in the paper, claiming it showed that both past and current climate events are the result of cosmic rays. As Dr. Gavin Schmidt of NASA has shown on www.realclimate.org, 5 missing steps would have to be taken to justify the wild claims in the press release. Quote, "We've often criticized press releases that we felt gave misleading impressions of the underlying work," Schmidt says. "But this example is by far the most blatant extrapolation beyond reasonableness that we've seen," end quote. None of this seems to have troubled the program makers, who report the cosmic ray theory as if it trounces all competing explanations. And that ends my reading from George Monbiot's column in The Guardian. Unlike the film's producer Martin Durkin, who incidentally was already censured by the British TV Authority for fudging facts on a previous alleged documentary, George Monbiot footnotes all the science for the claims he makes, and they lead to real research papers by real scientists. Because there is a possibility that activity on the sun is a minor factor in our current rapid warming, scientists do not discount this theory entirely. It is possible that, say, 10% of warming is caused by changes in the sun. So what? Those changes are being magnified many times over by the greenhouse gases we create, the atmospheric mirrors that hold and build heat from whatever source right here on Earth. You and I are making the other 90% or 95%, whatever the case may be. The sun will do whatever it does over hundreds of years and hundreds of thousands of years, but your action, personally and politically, causes climate change. Sorry, that's the inconvenient truth. Indulgent scam number 3. Hey, I went to Bali in a monster carbon-burning airplane last winter, but I don't worry. I paid $10 to plant a few trees somewhere. My house burns enough carbon to power 10 villages in Pakistan, but that's all taken care of. My lifestyle is totally green, all with the magic of carbon offsets. The Catholic Church had the same scam going in the Middle Ages. Sinners could just buy a piece of paper from the Vatican that absolved them from their wrongdoing. These scraps of paper were called indulgences, and they sold like hotcakes. Presumably, you showed them to St. Peter and got into heaven instead of hell.
Bless me, Father Philip, for I have sinned. It's been only 200 miles since my last carbon confessional.
May the good Ford forgive you, my son. For your penance, read the Kyoto Protocol and sign up for TerraPass. Now drive off in peace, will you?
Well, Dell Computer donates $2 from every laptop to offset carbon dioxide emissions from their computers. Now some Hollywood celebrities are claiming a green lifestyle, showing off their scraps of paper for carbon offsets. But the way these schemes are working, or not working, will probably take their descendants straight to hell, and ours too. The trouble is, most of these carbon offset firms claim to be saving carbon by planting trees. But scientists say they won't really save any carbon. First of all, most of the tree planting is conveniently close to home, in the temperate countries. In British Columbia, Premier Gordon Campbell sees a whole new future for the dying forest industry, and I do mean dying forests, now that global warming has released the pine-boring disaster, by planting new trees to offset other carbon emissions. Young trees do absorb carbon dioxide, but because they are darker than grasslands, they absorb more of the sun's heat. They change the so-called albedo effect, the reflection of the sun's rays. And that's even more true of evergreens that protrude from the snow in the winter in northern latitudes. So the warming influence cancels out the carbon storage. Worse, the trees eventually die, releasing the carbon, and they may die en masse, as they are now doing in the Rocky Mountains, sending up clouds of carbon, generally in uncontrollable forest fires. Planting trees in the tropics might be more workable. Not only do they store more carbon there, trees also send down roots that cause more water evaporation. In theory, this creates clouds that shade the Earth. But we aren't really sure of the total impact, because water vapor is also a global warming gas. In any event, for every tiny patch planted by guilty airplane passengers, a whole forest is being chopped down for biofuels, which is our next scam. Gigantic scam number 4, biofuels. Scientists and planners talk about wedges, a series of part solutions that can add up to salvation from climate disaster. A viable part of that big plan could be biofuels, burning plant material instead of oil from underground. Plants take carbon out of the air, so when we burn them in our cars as ethanol, for example, we are just returning carbon that was already there. That's better than mining new concentrated carbon like oil or coal. The theory sounds good. It is more or less working in Brazil, where sugarcane, which can grow almost untended there, is used to produce ethanol, which fuels 85% of the cars of the country. But when we blow this up to a global scheme and apply it to the crazed and greedy world of mass humanity and energy, something very bad happens. We end up creating much more carbon than we thought we saved. In fact, the whole plant world of Earth becomes just a big machine that feeds our gas pumps. Nothing left for the other species, and in fact, let's get rid of any plants that don't feed our cars and trucks. And I won't even go into discussing how biofuels are competing with food crops. We've seen the tortilla crisis in Mexico, where corn has gone way up so it can go into American cars. But at any rate, the biofuel craze is exactly what's happening in the most critical areas of Earth, the lungs of the planet in the Amazon and Indonesia.
Deutsche Welle Radio. Living Planet.
Hello and a very warm welcome to this week's edition of Living Planet. I'm Anya Coopers in Bonn. deforestation is now known to be a contributor as well. Could you tell me how serious deforestation is as a contributor compared to, let's say, industrial pollution or car exhaust fumes?
Actually, as a single source, deforestation is the second most important source after production of electricity and heating. And so at the global level, if you look at deforestation, it contributes about 20% of all the carbon dioxide, all the greenhouse gases, rather, that come from human activity.
That's a huge amount. I mean, do you think that's something that people are generally aware of?
No, I wouldn't think so. And this is roughly the same amount as comes from the United States, which is a very major economy. The reason why deforestation contributes greenhouse gases is that the trees are basically made of carbon. And once those trees are either burned or cut down, that carbon is released in the form of carbon dioxide that goes into the atmosphere. And so trees can then recapture that carbon dioxide when they grow. And so carbon dioxide and carbon is cycling through the living system all the time. But by cutting down trees and preventing them from regrowing, you are actually releasing carbon dioxide into the atmosphere.
In the last few years, you may have noticed the occasional news article about smoke from Indonesia floating over Malaysia and Singapore, creating horrible health problems and irritation. In fact, the rainforests of Indonesia are being burned down to plant two crops, soybeans for animal feed, and palm oil for biofuels. These palm oil plantations, often financed by Chinese interests, are a blight on the rainforest and may kill off well-known species like the orangutan. They may also tip Earth's climate change out of control. The palm oil ends up going to would-be green countries like the Netherlands, which brags about using this alternative fuel in their power stations to save the environment. Worldwide, the biofuel craze is spurring deforestation. According to Stephen Leahy, writing for Interpress on March 22nd, nearly 40,000 hectares of forest vanish every day, driven by the world's growing hunger for timber, paper, and biofuels. The palm oil craze has spread to Thailand, Malaysia, and other countries in Africa. In Asia, it is now being called deforestation diesel. And the natural forests are being replaced by a monoculture, stripped of species, so we can drive around or turn on our electric power. And these palm oil plantations hold a tiny fraction of the carbon sequestered by the previous dense jungle forests. Add up the carbon costs of shipping the oil by tankers across the globe, processing it in energy-hungry refineries, transporting it to the local station, and the carbon savings is where? In your imagination. Some claim there is a small space for real biofuels made from waste, such as animal manure, but that should be going back to the land instead of oil-based fertilizers. Really, there is no waste in nature, and not enough biomass to spare to keep our SUVs rolling down oily asphalt highways. Biofuels are developing into a scam that ruins the earth and may kill us anyway, but politicians love it as a way to prop up ailing car industries with an allegedly green fuel. Life just goes on.
Hello, my name is Almut, and I'm a member of a British group called Biofuel Watch. What we read about initially were reports from Indonesia and Malaysia, which said that up to 20 million hectares of land in Indonesia alone may be converted to new palm oil plantations to satisfy the growing demand for biofuels. Indonesia is already, according to recent studies, the third largest emitter of greenhouse gases worldwide. It's the third largest emitter not because they burn heaps of fossil fuels, they don't, but because their agroforestry sector is destroying the rainforest and is destroying the peatlands and is destroying thereby one of the world's most important carbon sinks, vastly accelerating global warming. Later on, read that similar things are happening not just in Southeast Asia, but also in South America, where the Amazon is threatened in particular by the growing incursion of soya, and soya is becoming one of the prime feedstocks for biofuels. Since then, we have read reports that similar developments are happening really throughout Asia, Africa, and Latin America. What we found out when we looked further into the biofuel business is that there is a global blueprint, there's a global strategy supported by certain scientists, institutions, a number of governments, and also a number of northern-based NGOs, which supports a movement away from fossil fuels onto bioenergy. Some of it foresees replacing up to 30-40% of current fossil fuel burning with bioenergy, and it foresees that happening to a very large extent from the expansion of monocultures, expansion of agribusiness, businesses particularly in the global south. All the studies expect that the tropical and to lesser extent the subtropical nations will provide the bulk of the of Europe's and the OECD countries' energy supplies. What that will mean, and what it's beginning to mean already, is the displacement of large numbers of local people, terrible impacts on food security, on human rights, on social equality, on the global local environment, on biodiversity, but particularly, or most worryingly for I think anybody, on destabilizing the global climate. I think we have to be quite clear that if those plans go ahead, we can see the demise of the Amazon. We will almost certainly see the complete destruction of Southeast Asia's peatlands. And together, this will emit enough carbon into the atmosphere to give us a reasonable chance of a eventual complete meltdown of Greenland and West Antarctica, and impacts that will destabilize all life forms and all life systems across the planet. With that in mind, I would ask everybody to get together and look in detail at what the biofuel expansion is doing to the planet and how we can all get together and in our own countries become part of a global opposition movement to try and stop this destructive blueprint from being put into action.
In a little while we just might see the end is near, but it will be too close to recognize. Well, we keep looking for that light to reappear. It will be lost inside the shadow of our eyes. It will be lost inside the lies.
You're listening to Radio EcoShocks, Climate Scams, 7 Roads to Hell on Earth. God-awful scam number 5, nuclear power will save us. You know there's something wrong when perennial Greenpeace founder and paid corporate spokesperson Patrick Moore endorses anything. He's told us how good clear cuts are for mountain slopes, how vinyl is great for us, and how fish farms are good too. This year, he was hired to trot out his Greenpeace founder cash cow for the nuclear industry. And that industry, which hasn't built a new reactor in the United States for 30 years, is already gushing with new green goodness. Yep, Chernobyl and Three Mile Island are behind us now. It's time to save the planet with more radioactive goo. Look, the French are doing it. They get 85% of their electricity from nuclear power. Of course, insider publications like Nucleonics Week are loaded with the near misses in the French nuclear plants. It will only take one big accident at one reactor to shut down the lights of France and wreck their famous countryside. But hey, it's worth the risk just to keep on using tons of energy. Why turn out a light just to keep your country from being soaked in radiation for 100,000 years? Lately, YouTube has been littered with videos from front groups receiving thinly veiled funding from the nuclear industry. One says that energy supply is more important than the environment. Is it? What good is an air conditioner if the crops all wilt in the fields? Can we live without a habitable environment? I won't run all the clips from the nuke happy companies hoping to get the government to insure the uninsurable, to provide construction funding, and, oh yeah, to guarantee investors a healthy profit no matter what happens. That is what they want to make this new nuclear renaissance. Classic top-down capitalism where the big corporations take away the cash and you, the public, swallow all the risk, and maybe a good dose of radiation for your kids' thyroids as well. Who knows? As climate solution scams go, this is one of the most dangerous, Most nations have already turned away from nuclear energy and the accompanying proliferation of nuclear weapons as an obvious wrong turn in technology. Now they want to bring it back from the crypt to save us from our own energy gluttony from climate change. Don't buy it.
Now, this sounds like a joke, but this is actually true. They've suggested growing giant artificial trees, which would turn carbon dioxide back into oxygen. Right, tree.
Why
we don't have enough trees.
Yeah, okay.
Well, these would be bioengineered giant trees.
Oh, they already have those.
That would be self-growing chemical creations,
yeah,
you know.
So grow 10 feet. Throw it at the end of the show.
Now, come on, you guys. This is serious. Global warming is a serious problem, and we have to come up with a man-made way to solve it. Right. We can't just, like, stop burning garbage and fuel. So, therefore, we have to come up with an artificial solution, another good scientific idea, such as shade. And this is one I read on CNN.com not 2 hours ago. Shade from trillions of flying saucers. Man-made, not Exist or Greys or any of those amateur-type aliens.
That's the answer besides to global warming is shade from trillions of flying saucers in the air?
Crazy idea number 6, geoengineering.
I'm Jay Hughes, producer of Change Surfer Radio.
Speaking today with Jemay Cassio. Jemay is co-founder of the website worldchanging.com. He is an author of several books, science fiction novels, transhuman space novels, Broken Dreams, and Toxic Memes, and now it runs a futurist consulting firm, Open the Future. Jemay is also a... Okay, so how do we remediate the carbon we got out there now?
So how do we remediate the carbon? Geoengineering is a really tricky subject. The concept is that all the great things you can do to reduce the carbon that you put out will help to slow and maybe even stop the increase over time, the increase in global warming. But it's not going to do anything to bring the temperature down. It's not going to do anything to bring the carbon levels down. CO2 takes over a century to cycle through the atmosphere. So just with natural processes, we're not going to get that CO2 out until the next century at the absolute earliest. So what geoengineering says is that it's possible to develop technologies that operate on a planetary scale to alter the balance of natural processes and natural substances in the atmosphere, you know, carbon in this case, so as to accelerate the process of cycling the CO2 out and to reduce, you know, over time, not just our impact, but you know, that we would do going forward, but the impact we've already had. Now, what's tricky about this is that we don't understand these processes very well yet, and it's very likely that if we were to find ourselves being so desperate to do anything to prevent climate catastrophe that we start to engage haphazardly in geoengineering efforts, we could easily find ourselves in a world where we've actually made things worse. You know, the example is that the example I like to cite here is that up until fairly recently, people used to talk about the idea of dumping large amounts of iron particles into the South Pacific in order to promote blooms of algae, because algae is really good at sucking CO2 out of the air, and it uses iron as one of its, you know, primary sources for what's energy or whatever for reproduction. It's a nutrient for algae. The problem is that it's been discovered that when you have too big of an algae bloom, and certainly something that would be big enough to start pulling CO2 out of the air in measurable levels would count as too big. You sterilize large parts of the ocean. You basically make thousands of square miles, potentially even more than that, unlivable for anything.
We discovered that because it's already happening in places.
Yes, exactly. There have been various cases where you've had these massive algae blooms for natural reasons that have then turned around. The result has been the deaths of fish and plants and pretty much anything. You have these completely sterilized parts of the ocean. And, so one could totally imagine that had we decided 10 years ago that we desperately needed to do something to pull the CO2 out of the atmosphere, that somebody would have gone out and dumped iron into the ocean in order to promote algae. And today we would have a dead ocean, and we'd be dead not too much longer after that.
So you're open to the idea, but we have to be extremely cautious.
I'm open to the idea of, and in fact I encourage the idea of studying it, because it is a distinct possibility. It's a distinct possibility for a couple of reasons. One, we may well get into a situation where we're utterly desperate, that no matter how hard we try to reduce the amount of carbon output that we have from our society, you know, from our civilization, it's too late. You know, and in fact, it may well be too late already, that the heat buildup that we're already committed to, you know, as I described before, would be enough to kick us over a tipping point into a new climate system. We're currently in a warm, wet system. We'd be moving into a warm, dry system, which would be devastating, would quite literally kill millions, if not billions, of people just because from starvation and pandemic disease. And so we may find ourselves desperate to do something. So since that is a very real possibility, it is incumbent upon us to make sure that we know what we're doing if we face that possibility. Secondly, the idea of being able to alter geophysical systems is undoubtedly going to appeal to some national leader as a way of increasing their global power. You think of it as military power or geomilitary power. And so we're gonna need to study and understand how these processes work, if only because we're gonna need to know how to defend ourselves. And when I say we and ourselves, I'm not just talking about the United States. I'm talking about anyone in the world, any nation in the world is going to need to understand what their options are. You know, should some rogue leader, cowboy leader, whoever you want to think of in that role, decide that geoengineering tools would be a really great way of forcing another state to do something it otherwise didn't want to do.
Well, that's a happy thought to end on, but we're going to have you back because you have a lot of interesting thoughts about our cyber future as well. You've written these participatory panopticon articles, and you're involved in meta universe mapping and all kinds of things. So we've been speaking with Jamé Cassio. He's a futurist. You can find more of his work at the IET website and also at openthefuture.com. He's the co-founder of worldchanging.com, which has a wonderful new book out, which includes some of his work, and the author of the novels Broken Dreams and Toxic Memes. Well, thank you for being with us today, Jamé.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio, a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future, brought to you by the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies and produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. I'm Jay Hughes.
Would you buy a climate change solution from a guy who invented and made the worst, most horrible weapon in the world? Yes, the father of the hydrogen bomb, the late Edward Teller, and his spawn at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories, the cradle of weapons of mass destruction, have a plan to save you from yourselves. Now, all we have to do is block out the sun. Remember the cartoon series The Simpsons, where the evil nuclear plant owner Mr. Burns made a shade to stop the sun? He did it in order to sell more nuclear electricity. Now art becomes life, as the Lawrence Livermore Bunch describe a massive project to launch millions of mirrors into outer space to deflect the sun. Other scientists, some of them quite legitimately worried that humans are not going to make the change before disaster comes, are looking at last-ditch technologies to save us. For example, in Arizona, Professor Roger Angel, who designed the world's largest telescope, is now working on an idea of a giant glass sunshade to be launched into space.
Look, Mummy, it's the sunshade.
Professor Stephen Salter wants to send out 1,000 ships, spraying droplets to generate more clouds. You don't mind it being more cloudy all the time, do you? Maybe you've heard Professor Jones's solution to add iron and other nutrients to the oceans to cause plankton blooms. Plankton soaks up serious amounts of CO2, but then these blooms can get out of hand, soaking up all the oxygen needed by other life forms and making vast dead zones. That has already happened in various parts of the world. It took millions of years of evolution for the ocean to find a balance. Maybe we shouldn't mess with it, since obviously we don't know what we're doing. Or catch Professor Paul Crutzen, a Nobel Prize winner. He suggests we might blast off hundreds of rockets loaded with tons of sulfur to make a thin veil of pollution to ward off the sun. We'll bring back acid rain and maybe damage the ozone layer, but that's better than a world suddenly 4 or 5 degrees hotter. But even he thinks the idea is crazy and crude. We just got tons of sulfur out of the air to stop acid rain. Now we're thinking of using pollution to stop pollution? As George Monbiot pointed out when asked about such geoengineering, we have to stop emitting carbon anyway, because it's being soaked up by the ocean, which is turning more acidic and threatening the ocean food chain. Even if we can block the sun, we are poisoning the ocean. Couldn't we just take the bus instead, or use a bicycle? Never mind the fact that all the planet's life depends on the sun, including our own agriculture. And who cares if the idea would cost zillions of dollars, using a technology nobody has ever tried? We can just go on polluting, knowing there is an idea out there. That's all that counts. Surely the natural systems will let us off the hook. I mean, we'll come up with a technical answer somehow, won't we? As Alfred E. Newman says, why worry now?
But the atmosphere doesn't care. It doesn't brook any excuses. The atmosphere is not concerned because it's incapable of being concerned. All that counts is how much carbon dioxide is produced, not whether or not there's a good reason for producing that carbon dioxide. And however nice and decent and well-meaning and environmentally conscious you are, if you are producing 19 tons of carbon dioxide per person per year, you are as bad as the most recidivist Neanderthals in the shrinking state of Bushistan.
George Monbiot, author of Heat, How to Stop the Planet Burning. Scam number 7, global warming is good for you. As I said at the beginning, there are as many knuckleheaded solutions to climate change as there are fools on this planet, and that's plenty. We could go on for hours, but I'll stop with the most pathetic and vicious lie out there. Global warming is good for you.
Honey, it's getting too hot in L.A.
Well, let's call up the mover and head for Vancouver.
We're Canadians for global warming. All this talk of doom and gloom is really such a bore. We say don't believe those awful warnings. Now someone please shut up that inconvenient Al Gore. There's no need to worry about the glaciers or the penguins. All this talk of politics is really getting old. Besides, we're getting tired of wearing these big parkas. Canadian weather's too wet and cold. So we're Canadians for global warming. America, we know that you really do care, 'cause we see Pat Robertson on TV.
Or how about this one? The carbon industry wants you to know that carbon dioxide is good for you.
Something called the Competitive Enterprise Institute has paid for a series of American television ads over the next few weeks to counter the Gore argument.
Carbon dioxide. They call it pollution. We call it life.
Do I need to tell you that human civilization as we know it goes to hell if we allow rapid climate change to happen? And not just us, the whole world of animals and plants face hardship and massive extinctions already. Billions of deaths and climate refugees await humanity while these mindless idiots tell us not to worry. It's the Dick Cheney school of planet management. Grab the profits and run. But run where? To the Arctic? I'm Alex Smith, and you've been listening to the Radio EcoShock 2007 countdown of climate change scams. Be sure to tune in or download our companion program, Climate Change Solutions 2007. Then you can bypass Go, collect the $200 in a new carbon-free economy, and go on playing in a world worth living in. Find these programs and a lot more, all free, at our website, www.ecoshock.org. That's E-C-O, shock, like an electric shock, .org. Thanks for listening.
It's a boiling point, and the heat is on, and pretty soon, it'll all be gone. Time is short to change the score, or look in Webster's for dinosaur. 24 years, 90%. get evicted, or pay the rent. There are just two words that will decide. Carbon dioxide.